The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 5, Texts Number 34, 35, and 36. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on December 24th, 2014, in Melbourne, Australia.
So, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 5, Text 34. To get some nectar of Prabhupada's purports, since this 34 does not have a purport, nor does 35 have a purport, we read on to Text 36 so we can get the mercy of a wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Anila,
Anila
Api,
Api
Vikra
Vikrana
Vikravana Nabasa Urubala Andita Sasarja
Rupa
Tatmatram Jyoti Lokasya Lochanam Anilopi Vikurvano Nabasoru Balanvita Sasarja Rupatan Matram Jyotir Lokasya Lokchanam Analopi Vikurvano Nabasoru Balanvita Sasarja Rupatan Matram Jyotir Lokasya Lochanam Anila,
Air.
Api, also,
Vikurvana,
being transformed. Nabasa,
sky.
Urubala Anvita,
extremely powerful. Sasarja,
created.
Rupa,
form.
Tatmatram,
sense perception.
Jyoti,
electricity.
Lokasya,
of the world.
Lochanam,
light to see.
Translation.
Thereafter, the extremely powerful air, interacting with the sky, generated the form of sense perception, and the perception of form transformed into electricity, the light to see the world. Text 35. Anali nan vitang jyotir vikuravat paravikshitam adatambo rasa mayang kala mayang shayogataha. When electricity was surcharged in the air and was glanced over by the Supreme, at that time, by a mixture of eternal time and external energy, there occurred the creation of water and taste. Jyotishambho nusang smishtam vakurvad brahma vakshitam mahim gandagunam adhat kala mayangsha yogataha. Translation. Thereafter, the water produced from electricity was glanced over by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and mixed with eternal time and external energy. Thus, it was transformed into the earth, which is qualified primarily by smell. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. From the descriptions of the physical elements in the above verses, it is clear that in all stages, the glance of the Supreme is needed with the other additions and alterations. In every transformation, the last finishing touch is the glance of the Lord, who acts as a painter does when he mixes different colors to transform them into a particular color. When one element mixes with another, the number of its qualities increases. For example, the sky is the cause of air. The sky has only one quality, namely sound. But by the interaction of the sky with the glance of the Lord, mixed with eternal time and external nature, the air is produced, which has two qualities, sound and touch. Similarly, after the air is created, interaction of sky and air touched by time and the external energy of the Lord produces electricity. And after the interaction of electricity with air and sky mixed with time, external energy, and the Lord's glance over them, the water is produced. In the final stage of sky, there is one quality, namely sound. In the air, two qualities, sound and touch. In electricity, three qualities, namely sound, touch, and form. In water, four qualities, sound, touch, form, and taste. And in the last stage of physical development, the result is earth, which has all the five qualities, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. Although they are different mixtures of different materials, such mixtures do not take place automatically, just as a mixture of colors does not take place automatically without the touch of the living painter. The automatic system is factually activated with the glancing touch of the Lord. Living consciousness is the final word in all physical changes. This fact is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9:10 as follows. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagad viparivartate. The conclusion is that the physical elements may work very wonderfully to the layman's eyes, but their working actually takes place under the supervision of the Lord. Those who can mark only the changes of the physical elements and cannot perceive the hidden hands of the Lord behind them are certainly less intelligent persons, although they may be advertised as great material scientists. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapadukam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Sabadudam Parijana Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Vadam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Godavani Pacharini Nivishesha Shunyabhari Paschachati Sutanani. Well, Prabhupada took another jab at the material scientist today. It's one of his favorite pastimes, defeating the material scientists. There's many a walk on Venice Beach. When he walked with our PhD, we had our Swarup Damodar PhD in biology, and Prabhupada loved to go on the morning walks with him. Swarup Damodar would take the role of the scientist, and Prabhupada defeat. So there's that whole book, Life Comes from Life. Just Prabhupada's many, many conversations. Actually, they edited the book down a little bit. If you got the actual transcripts, Prabhupada said, the more we kick Darwin in the face, the more we make spiritual advancement. It's actually said. In the book it says, the more we defeat Darwin. But actually, Prabhupada, kick in the face. So Prabhupada has a very kick in the face attitude for the material scientists. Why, one might ask? I mean, they're doing so many wonderful things. I mean, they're giving us, microphones and computers and smartphones and 747s and internet. I mean, why do we have to take so many jabs at the material scientists, one might ask? Well, because they negate the personality of Godhead, that's why. Their whole approach is to negate God. That's why. We're not against all the wonderful things they're doing. We're using them. All their technological advances, we're using all of them. We have nothing against what they've done. It's just the consciousness to negate God. That's the objection we have to their position, their arguments. They say that everything came out of absolutely nothing. They say we're not actually persons, we're just robots. These are nonsensical propositions. It's one thing to have technical expertise to do this and that, but then to claim knowledge of reality itself, is it? That's beyond their scope to understand. And just like that Dr. Frog, I think you all know about Dr. Frog. He was very proud. He had his well. he was thinking, this, my well is the greatest body of water in the whole world. He had many little froggy students, and he was very proud. So one of his little students, Freddy, he went hopping one day. He heard there was some big body of water. He thought he would check it out. He hopped and he hopped and he hopped and he hopped, and he found the Atlantic Ocean. And he was going, wow. I thought Dr. Frog's well was the biggest body of water, but you know, there's no comparison. I see big ships floating here, and so many, you can't even see the end of it. So he went hopping back to Dr. Frog and give him the news. Dr. Frog, Dr. Frog, there's a body of water much bigger than your well. No, it can't be possible. You're crazy. It's impossible. My well is the biggest body of water in all of existence. Don't think otherwise. But no, Dr. Frog, there's ships floating on it. You can't even see the other side. It disappears into the horizon. Your well doesn't do that. So Dr. Frog was thinking, well, he said, well, is it this much bigger than my well? You know how the frogs can puff up their chests. He said, is it this much bigger than my well? No, Dr. Frog, it's much bigger than that. Well, is it this much bigger than my well? No, Dr. Frog, it's much, much bigger than that. Well, is it, boom, he exploded himself. Puffed up himself so much, finished, you see. So in this way, you see, they may be able to give us so many nice gadgets that we can use for Krishna, that's okay. But they're not able to explain by their mental speculation what is reality. They're not able to do that. They're not able to tell us how everything has come into being, how it's expanded out, is described here very scientifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They can't do that. It's beyond the realm of mental speculation. To understand these things, one has to hear from authority. Even in their own science, they do that. They accept some other scientists as an authority, like Darwin, for example. And then they take as gospel what he has taught, and they teach it. So even they are following this system, accepting some authority. The difference is they're taking as an authority an imperfect mental speculator. We take as our authority that very person who is the origin of everything that exists. So who is the actual person who can speak authoritatively? Just like there was a drama written in India when Bengali gentleman, Mr. Roy, he wrote a drama called Shah Jahan. You may know that Shah Jahan, he is the one who made the Taj Mahal. So anyway, Shah Jahan, he had a son named Aurangzeb, which we know very well in ISKCON. He's the one who smashed the temples in Vrindavan and all over India. He smashed temples. He's a great demon, Aurangzeb. So, in this drama, Aurangzeb, he puts his father in prison, he murders his brothers, and he takes over the kingdom, you see. So the whole drama is about Aurangzeb. There's hardly any mention of Shah Jahan in the whole drama. He was locked up in the Agra fort. So someone was asked, well, Mr. Roy, why do you call it Shah Jahan when the whole drama is about Aurangzeb? He said, well, Shah Jahan, he was hearing of these atrocities. He was beating on his heart. Every report he heard of what his son was doing, just beating on his heart. So he's the real hero of this drama. Therefore, I've named it Shah Jahan. So how would you know that? Only the author can tell you. Why is it called Shah Jahan and not Aurangzeb? You see? So if you want to know about something, you need to go to the author, the creator of the thing. He can authoritatively speak. Others may guess, well, I think it was called Shah Jahan for this reason or that reason. It's just speculation. The only person who really knows why it's called Shah Jahan is the author himself who did that, who named it Shah Jahan. So in the same way, if you want to know why, how this creation has come into being, why it has come into being, how it is functioning, what is its purpose, what is its function, then you need to go to the creator of it. You see? Darwin didn't create the species. You see? Stephen Hawking didn't create the universe. They're not authorities. The actual authority is that person who is emanating everything from himself. It's all coming out of him. Aham sarvasya prabhavau matak sarvam pravartate iti madhva bhajante bang buddha bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So if you want to know things as they are, if you want to be a true scientist, if you want to understand what's going on here with all these energies and all this, all these material elements, if you really want to get in down to the bare facts of reality, then you need to connect with that person who's doing the whole thing. This very minute, who's emanating all this energy from his transcendental body. You need to connect with that person. You don't need to speculate or become a student of these speculators who come up with all these fancy highfalutin, as we say in Texas, theories. What is the status of what they call science? Every few years they have to revise the thing. What is science now? 5 years from now it's considered incorrect. You see? I'll give you an example. Many years ago when I was a young brahmachari, there was in Gainesville. Our temple was there right by the campus. And great preaching on that campus. We started a Food for Life program. It's still going on now. And it was started in 71 where Gargamuni Swami and I revived it in 73. And it's been going on nonstop since 1973 on that campus. A wonderful program there. University of Florida Food for Life. All kinds of interesting stories about pastimes of that program. But anyway, there was a big PhD coming to the campus to tell us about the black holes in outer space. And all the science students came out, all the professors. It's a huge hall. It must have been, it seemed like 3,000 students. I don't know the exact count. But he had this thing. He did a slide, like a thing. He turned off the lights. And he did this whole thing on the screen. He showed us all about the black holes in outer space. So then there was a question and answer session after that. So I thought I'd ask a few questions. So I got held my hand up there, my saffron dhoti, my shaved head. I looked a little different than the other students, but they let me ask them questions. So I raised my hand. I said, what you have presented to us, is this a theory or is it a fact? And he said, I think it's a fact. Not the word I think. So somebody else got another question, and another question came, and finally I got recognized again. And then I said this. I said, throughout the history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some period of time as being the accepted truth, and then it's replaced by another theory. So how do we know that your theory, and he just said it's a fact, and now I'm calling it, this is called a loaded question. How do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? And then he said, I hope it is, because then we will be making progress. So just see, a minute ago he said it's a fact, it's the absolute truth, this is the reality, this is the fact. He said, actually, when it's shown that it's only, when it's actually incorrect, that will be the progress of science. So this is what they call science. Whoever comes up with the most sophisticated argument to defeat all opposing arguments, that's accepted as the gospel truth until somebody else comes along and shoots it down with a more convincing argument. That's what they call science. That's not science. It's just word jugglery. Whoever is the most expert word juggler, he's accepted as the leading scientist of the day until someone else who's more expert at word jugglery comes along and replaces him. So this is not this is not science. Science means to know things as they are. Science doesn't change. Science is the truth now. It's true now. It's true 10 million years ago. It's true 10 million years into the future. So in the Krishna consciousness movement, we are blessed by the teachings of the greatest scientists in the history of the universe. We are blessed by Srila Vyasadeva and those who are coming in his line of teaching. You see, we are taking this scientific knowledge coming down from the greatest scientist, from the original scientist, Krishna himself. The scientist means a knower of reality. So the greatest scientist, of course, is Krishna himself. And those who understand the teachings of Krishna and teach the teachings of Krishna, they are also the greatest scientists in history. So we don't follow the mental speculators, we follow the scientists, the true scientists. Krishna consciousness is a science. It's not a sentiment. It's a science of God. In other words, just as two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen give you water, in the same way, you can take a sincere, devoted meditation on the holy name of God, you can put it in your heart, and love of God will manifest within your heart. Just in the same scientific way, you can put two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen in a test tube and get water. In the same way, you can put sincere love, meditation on the holy name of God into your heart and get the awakening of love of God within your heart, just like you can get water from hydrogen and oxygen. Scientifically, it works. It's a scientific process. It works for anybody. It's not a relative thing. Well, you have to believe in it. It's a matter of your opinion. No, it's a fact. Anybody who will lovingly chant the holy name of the Lord and follow the laboratory manual given by the acharyas, the 10 offenses, you see, how to conduct the experiment. If you'll follow the lab manual, avoiding the 10 offenses, and you will chant Hare Krishna, then you will actually get the awakened love of God. It is a scientific fact. You will get the awakening love of God. You will personally experience Krishna. You will personally meet Krishna. You will revive your original identity as an eternal associate of Krishna. This is scientific fact. So we don't waste our time following these scientists. Although they're very much touted and worshipped in this world, I know when I go to London, and sometimes we pass through London on our way to Australia, and we sometimes give a lecture at the Soho Temple in the evening. on the way from the airport to the Soho Temple, we go by the, what's it called, the Natural Museum of Science. It's the Darwin Temple. The big Darwin Temple. And they have, on the British currency, they have Darwin. Darwin is the big, big name in the UK. Big, big name. He's a national hero there. But we're not carried away. We just understand that how foolish they are to worship this person, to glorify him as the great brain that's, you know, showing us the way out of darkness into an enlightened understanding of reality. It's not a fact. They have never actually proven that one species transforms another species. It's never been proven. It's never been proven. It's simply a theory. The fact is the species are already there in the very beginning, as described in the Vishnu Purana. Jalaja navalakshani stavara laksha vingshati krimiya rudda sankhyaka pakshinam dashalakshanam trincha lakshani pashyavaha chatur lakshani manashah. Those species are already there. They're already given. They come with the universe. The universe is packaged with 8,400,000 species. It's already, it's part of the deal. It's there from the very beginning. This idea of one species evolving another species is not correct. Evolution is correct, but it takes place as you transmigrate from one body to another body. That is the evolution that takes place. The soul evolves to higher and higher forms through the cycle of birth and death. That is the proper understanding of evolution. Not that the forms are changing. The soul is species hopping and in the cycle of birth and death. That is a proper understanding of evolution. So perhaps there's some questions. Okay. All right. I have seen some devotees touching their shoes and entering the temple without washing their hands. Well, you have to touch it. Well, taking off your shoes, you might touch them to put them on the shoe rack. I don't think we have to have a hard and fast rule. You have to wash your hands if you're touching your shoes. Now, if you could do an arti, obviously you would say the achman and purify yourself. But I don't think it's required. I think that's too much rules and regulations. But definitely take your shoes off before you come in. That way. Why does Krishna wear tilak? This was asked last night, because he's also Hare Krishna. Can you please tell us how to become simple, humble instruments of our spiritual master? Just do I obey? By being obedient. That's all. By being obedient. That's the third principle given by Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami lists, the first thing is you take shelter of Guru, the second one is you get initiated, the third one is you're obedient. So if you just be obedient, that will bring you to the proper position. Be obedient to your spiritual master. He's obedient to his spiritual master, who's obedient to his spiritual master. That is the system. We all do that. Your spiritual master is a spiritual master only because he's obedient to his spiritual master. If he's not obedient to his spiritual master, he's not a guru, not your spiritual master. The system is obedience to the previous acharya. That is the system. I'm very open to being corrected and chastised by devotees. I know there is much to learn, and sometimes I make mistakes that need correcting. However, sometimes devotees are very rude and disrespectful in their correcting. Sometimes at the point of feeling I want to cry. How to deal with this? Well, sometimes strong correction is needed. Try to be more humble and think, actually, I mean, we really have to take the humble position. If you want to be corrected, then why are you wanting to correct your correctors? You see? This is a mudra. I want to correct my... You're not correcting me properly, Prabhu. You see, you want to correct your correctors. Try to actually become humble and say, okay, please just... Let me just take the correction. What is progress in Krishna consciousness while living in the grihastha ashram, and how do we know that we are progressing in the right way? Progress means bhakti pareshana bhavaraktir, Bhagavatam says. To develop loving feelings for Krishna, to experience Krishna within everything, and to become detached from material sense gratification. That's how you can see you're making progress. How do you do it? Simple thing. Obey the orders coming down from Krishna through the parampara system. Follow those orders and sincerely and steadily and patiently and enthusiastically. What happened to the scientists who met Prabhupada? Did they give up their profession and go to Krishna consciousness? Some of them did. Sadaputta did. He was a big PhD in mathematics. He became a wonderful Krishna conscious scientist. So some of them did. Some of them didn't. Some of them did. How to apply and learn the science of God in one's own life. It's a simple thing. Follow the guidelines given by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion are described by Prabhupada. 64 items of how to engage in devotional service. Look in chapter 6 of the Nectar Devotion, how to discharge devotional service, and follow those 64 items. I still worry about what people think about me. My self-image should not interfere in my Krishna consciousness, but it does. I feel the need to impress others towards Krishna, and sometimes can come across as a radical. Please help. We are radicals, actually. We are radicals. We are proposing a radical transformation in the human society. Right now, they are going off the cliff. Human society is going off the cliff. They're going on a one-way street, on a dead end, off a cliff right now. That's where the human society is going. And we are radically different. We are going the opposite direction. They are going towards ever increasingly more decadent sense gratification. That's where they are heading. And we are giving up sense gratification, taking up devotional service of the Lord, just the opposite of where they are going. So we are the most radical people on this planet. We're the most radical people. And the world needs it. The world needs this radical change. So if you're to be a radical, then they have a proper understanding of you. You are a radical. And we have a reason that we're radical, because it's an emergency right now. The whole world is going into destruction. And our mission is to save the world. Prabhupada said, become guru and deliver the whole world. That's the order he gave his disciples in Los Angeles. So we have to really take up a very revolutionary, radical mood. But at the same time, we can't be puffed up. We have to understand, I'm just a humble messenger. It's not that I'm great. We have to just be humble. We have to be very most friendly, warm, loving people on the planet. We very sympathetic with everybody, very friendly. Just see how Prabhupada dealt with everyone. He was the most radical revolutionary in the history, but yet when it came to one-on-one relationships, he was the most humble, kind, considerate, sensitive person you ever meet. So you have to do both things. You have to be kind, considerate, humble, and sensitive and friendly. At the same time, a radical revolutionary. How to get rid of envy? I want to get rid of this feeling. It is making me slower in devotional service. I find it very easy. It's not difficult. Sometimes one might be envious, have a tendency to be envious of other devotees. So you just plow through that envy by glorifying them. Just plow right through it. Just glorify them. If you feel envy towards a devotee, say, actually, that devotee is wonderful. Just see the nice qualities of that devotee. And this way, just plow through it by glorifying. Wherever you're envious of, glorify them. Plow through it. Now, I found that's a very effective technique. Personally, when envy attacks me, I just start glorifying the object of my envy. And it's just, the envy goes away. Can we offer our obeisances to the Lord while the altar doors are closed? Of course. Krishna is present everywhere. You can offer obeisances to Krishna anytime, any place. Just by hearing today's verse purported by Srila Prabhupada, I feel that this is coming directly from Krishna himself. Jai, you've understood. And this shows that Srila Prabhupada is such a pure devotee, associating with Krishna himself at every moment. Then why I'm not taking full advantage of his books, purports, how can I sincerely practice in my everyday life remembering these wonderful purports? Well, your question, the mood you've expressed in your question is just that mood you need to keep, that hankering to take full advantage of these instructions. Keep that desire, that fire of desire burning in your heart, that I am not yet doing this, but I desire this, I must have this full understanding and application. Keep that fire of desire burning in your heart to be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. This is the mood of hankering that we learn from our previous acharyas, our great songwriters, especially Narottama Bhaktivinoda. They express this hankering. Kabe habbe bolo se dinamar. When, oh, when will that day be mine? You see, just when will that day come? Will I finally take full advantage of these teachings and stop being such a stupid idiot who's more interested in serving his senses than he is in serving Krishna? This kind of hankering, just keep feeling this hankering in your heart. That will burn away all of your lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy in due course. And you'll come out as a pure devotee at the end, a Paramahamsa. Do we have to honor meal prasadam every time someone offers me a prasadam meal? No, you don't have to. Sometimes I already had prasadam, my stomach is full, and they offered a meal prasadam. Can I say no? Yeah, it's okay, you can say no. Or at least honor a little piece. Yeah. Actually, there's one pastime where Prabhupada, he went to one of these holy, all the different gurus, some sadhu mela type thing, and they invited him to speak, and there were so many people who wanted Prabhupada to feed him prasadam. They were going from one house to different householders' homes. So Prabhupada took every invitation for prasadam. He accepted every one of them. And everyone, he'd take a little bite, a little bite, a little bite. He satisfied them by his nice dealings. But he would just take a little bite and he'd go to another place. Everybody wanted to feed him a meal. And he would just take a little bite in each place. And everybody was happy. So yeah, you can take a little bite. Okay. Well, should one aspire to be a lifelong brahmachari, avoid listening to kirtan sung by female devotees? This issue was raised with Prabhupada. They said, just like this wonderful, we have in the morning, you know, the Govinda tape, my beloved god sister Jamuna, such wonderful devotion Jamuna has. I don't say had because she's still living now. She's in some wonderful place, continuing with her wonderful devotion to Krishna. So wonderful. Govindam Adi Purusham. So some brahmachari said, this is a woman singing. Brahmacharis can't hear this. So they said, don't play this tape. Prabhupada loved that tape. When they first played that recording for Prabhupada, L.A. Prabhupada had the tears streaming down his face. He was in ecstasy. He said, "This is Sankirtan. It's congregation. So if a woman is singing a bhajan alone, that's one thing. A woman is leading a kirtan and devotees are responding, that's acceptable for a brahmachari," Prabhupada said. Just some woman alone singing bhajans, solo bhajans, maybe a brahmachari shouldn't take that as part of his sadhana. But for a woman leading kirtan, that's different. It's a group. She may sing a solo, but then the whole group comes in. Prabhupada approved of that. The brahmacharis can hear Jamuna singing every morning during the Govinda prayers. So you can understand from that. So we're going a little over time. What I'm going to do is save these other questions for the evening. We'll have another question and answer session tonight. So we invite everybody to come back for more questions and answers this evening. And we thank you all very much for your wonderful service to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is God Shri Mataji Shandra Sarkar ki?